The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, broadcasting from Washington, D.C., the heart of the city this morning, as the American Legislative Exchange Council has gathered for their every other year gathering in Washington, D.C. following an election. Joining me in studio at the hotel is Lee Schalk. He is the ALEC Policy Vice President, also in charge of new ALEC publications. Are you in charge of Rich State, Poor State?
You know, I help oversee the project. I'm not a co-author of the report, but I do enjoy getting into state capitals from time to time and giving presentations on what's in the report and how states can make their economies more competitive.
I love that book. I leave that in our home in Maine, and I leave it on the guest table because people visit us there. No one wants to come to D.C., but I leave it on the guest table there. Every single person who spends a night at the house reads about their own state, and then they begin to compare. It's like the best publication you could possibly do. I don't know who the original brain was behind that, but it's beautifully designed. It's very easy. You can download it, but I think people, can they order it from ALEC so that they get the hard copy paperback copy?
Yeah, you can order a copy. We'll send you one in the mail, but richstatespoorstates.org, it's all there. I was actually, my Uber driver recently was really interested to learn about it. He pulled it up on his Tesla touchscreen as we're driving.
I'm not sure I like that.
By the time I got dropped off at the airport, he was ready to leave Maryland.
Well, A, that's good. In fact, I came in this morning to the hotel and an ALEC staffer was going down to the gym. I said, you weren't outside, were you? And she said, no, because it's freezing. And I said, where are you from? She said, I'm from Maryland. I'm part of the ALEC staff. And I said, well, good. You know how cold it is. Why does anyone live in Maryland, do you think? No one should live there.
I've been asking the same question since I moved to this area. Yeah. I'm in Virginia.
I'm a Virginian.
The other side of the river.
Side of the river. And it makes all the difference in the world. D.C. should just tilt and empty out everyone. So, Lee, tell me about the publications and everything else that's going on.
You know, it's been a really exciting year for us. I think a banner year for publications, but just in the last couple of weeks, we've had our team put out reports on everything from the EU's Digital Markets Act and why that's a threat to American tech innovation. Our criminal justice director put out a report on no-knock raids, why that's actually a threat to both innocent civilians, but also the safety of police officers. We've got rising crime in the U.S. right now. And of course, that puts our officers at risk. This report explores that. It takes a different approach. I don't think anyone's done before.
How interesting. No, I haven't heard this.
It's fascinating. And it's gotten a great response. Nino Marchese was the author of it on our team. But I would encourage everyone to take a closer look at it. It's something that, you know, a couple of states have banned the practice altogether. This really came into the spotlight when Breonna Taylor was killed in Louisville, Kentucky.
That's right.
And, you know, her boyfriend fired shots at police officers. And actually, those
because they were coming into the house without a knock.
Exactly. Yeah. You're coming in without a knock. You've got the element of surprise. But those charges against her boyfriend were dropped. And we've seen this in a number of cases where police officers are getting injured on the job as a result. It's more dangerous for them, but innocent civilians.
I'm just surprised that that's in ALEC's wheelhouse. I mean, I've always thought of you guys as tax, spend, and education, but you do criminal justice reform as well.
We do, yeah. ALEC's been really on the cutting edge. We had a great conversation with one of Trump's top advisors on criminal justice reform. He'll be here today, who was really helping to shepherd the First Step Act. And he credits ALEC and a lot of the work that the groundwork that was being laid at the state level that really inspired the reforms of the Trump administration.
Lee, I want people to understand what ALEC is who didn't hear yesterday at all. So I want you to start from the ground up. But number one, you're not going into radio ever, are you? Because you got a great voice.
You know, I enjoy doing these shows.
No, does he have a good? I don't. I've got a couple of radio professionals. Actually, I have Lee Habib sitting here and my producer, non-producer, Dwayne. And whenever I hear someone with a good radio voice, I try to encourage them to do anything besides go into radio. You got a great radio voice.
So I appreciate that.
Do you do the podcast for ALEC?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. I thought so. Okay. We have to sabotage that and stop that where we can. Tell us about ALEC.
Well, ALEC is America's largest nonpartisan and keyword voluntary membership organization of state legislators. We've been doing it for nearly 50 years. We'll celebrate that anniversary next October. But everything we do is centered around our three core principles: limited government, free markets, and federalism. And we've got hundreds and hundreds of legislators from around the country in D.C. this week, not only sharing best practices from around the states, but they're also dedicated on restoring that balance of power of government back to the states. I think all of us would agree that power has become too concentrated in Washington, too concentrated in that fourth branch of government, the bureaucracy, the administrative state. And so we're all here. We're fired up. We've got a lot of newly elected legislators in town.
I'm going to talk with Melanie from Ohio because I like the Buckeyes more than anybody else. And where are you from originally?
North Carolina.
Okay, so you've got some good state legislators down there as well. Where'd you go to college?
Wake Forest.
Oh, you're awake. You're a Demon Deacon.
I am.
Tarzana Joe, poet laureate of the Hugh Hewitt Show, is a Demon Deacon. So they did you take English literature there or government?
Government. Yeah.
All right, so when ALEC gets together, it is a hotbed of idea swapping, I would assume. Which is the hottest? Is it education? I'm hoping it's education reform this year.
Education's been huge this year. When you talk about education savings accounts, opportunity for students, letting parents pick the best school for their children that fits their needs. We saw in West Virginia, their Hope Scholarship was one of the first in the country to create those education savings accounts for parents. And the state Supreme Court actually upheld that as constitutional this year. Arizona followed suit, took things even further with their universal ESA program. And they did that on razor thin margins. They passed it on the last day of session when riots were going out on outside the state capitol. Tear gas was being fired off because of these Roe v. Wade protesters. And yet legislators had the courage to get it done before the session ended and got it over to Governor Ducey, who signed it.
And I was last night at the Kirby Center, Hillsdale College, lantern of the D.C. area, and we were talking about the fact they run the charter school enhancement program there where they help charter schools get going, public charter schools. They provide curriculum, teacher training, principal training, all that sort of stuff. It's the golden age of school choice. It's a second flowering of educational opportunity. If you get $6,000, you and I are a tutor. If you get five students together, it's $30,000. You can pay a teacher who's going to work for 9 months. And with your six kids, it's an amazing thing that's going on in Arizona. What's the replicability of that in other states, do you think?
Well, one other interesting point about Arizona, I mean, if you look at the per pupil spending of the status quo, I mean, what states are spending, it costs more to send a kid to elementary school or public school in a state than it would to send them to college.
Right.
And, you know, that's something that people are starting to realize. You can put those dollars to better use when you put them in the parents' hands. But it is, I think, being replicated across the country. I'll just give a shout out to my friends in Iowa, Governor Kim Reynolds, cruising to easy reelection there. She's championing these same reforms, and she's got a big group of legislators here at ALEC this week who are eager to get back to work and put that into practice in their state.
Yeah, there wasn't a red wave, but there were red thunderstorms in various places across the country. One of those, there was a deluge of red in Iowa. And so they've got super majorities. And we had an Iowa legislator yesterday saying that is on the agenda. Now, I don't know if they're going to use the Ducey model, the Arizona model, or the West Virginia model, and we're going to have Ohio State backpack funding. But you're also doing criminal justice. What about flat taxes? Because don't the states figure out the reason that population is increasing in Texas, Tennessee, and Florida is that they don't have an income tax?
Well, yeah, and Iowa was one of the first states this year to kick off what we dubbed the flat tax revolution. They had a top marginal income tax rate of 8.5%.
Whoa.
They got that down to 3.9%. They're under 4% now. Kim Reynolds signed that right before she gave the State of the Union response to President Biden. But we call it the flat tax revolution because four other states followed suit this year: Iowa, Idaho, Arizona, Georgia, and Mississippi. And so it really was a banner year. You know, in terms of the red wave, I think the other story, and this gets back to ALEC publications, we ranked the 50 governors earlier this year. All of our five-star governors who were up for reelection easily won. They easily won reelection, but they did it in commanding fashion. Like I said, they won by way bigger margins than they did in 2018. And I would give credit, I would point to their policies and their leadership during COVID and coming out of it. with a lot of credit for that, you know, from flat taxes to, you know, standing by their right to work policies, but also their approaches to, you know, economic lockdowns. Governor Kemp in Georgia is a great example, another flat tax state. And, you know, some people might say, well, these governors, Kim Reynolds, she didn't have a strong opponent in Iowa this time around. Well, Brian Kemp was running against Stacey Abrams again.
Crushed her.
2018, he barely squeaked by, I think a point and a half. This time he crushed her.
And that reminds me, there is a special election on Tuesday in Georgia. Herschel Walker needs to win that. Early voting today, early voting tomorrow, then it's over. So they've had record early turnout. I think that's very good for Herschel, but people need to get out there and make sure, because they might have rough weather on election day. Republicans are typically same-day voters, and now I want to go. Does Alec recommend voting reform packages at all? Do you do any work in that? Because it's so weird across the 50 states.
Yeah, you know, we don't do, you know, Alec's known also for our model policy, and we don't tackle election reform when it comes to model policy. But of course, when you get a lot of great minds together in state lawmakers, of course, that's top of mind for so many people. And a lot of those great conversations happen with our members. But as far as Alec model policy, it's not something
now,
that
in,
we focus on.
In terms
on.
Of who's joining Alec, obviously people from reform-minded states like Ohio and Iowa and Florida, they're all here in Arizona.
Yeah.
Does it help a minority state? Republicans in California, I mean, they're like eight of them. Should they come at two? Should they join Alec?
They've got to be here. And, you know, I've talked to a couple friends from New York this week that I've seen, and it's a huge boost for them, I think, just to know that they're not alone, because they might feel like that in their state capital, you know, in Albany or Sacramento. But you come to Alec and you can, I think, get fired up, and you can take a lot of good things back home with you and hopefully bring some legislators with you next time.
And begin to persuade.
Exactly.
And all about persuasion. It's not about jamming any right-wing ideology down. It's about what works at the state level. So how long have you been doing this for Alec?
I've been at Alec for about 3.5 years now. I was a member of Alec and a previous job that I had. And so I've been around the organization for probably a total of 7-8 years.
Is it starting to even grow beyond what it had been? It's been around forever.
Yeah. We're like I said, we're going on our 50th anniversary next year, but the organization is growing. Our membership is growing. And I think it's because of the ideas and the policies. People are seeing what's working out there in the states.
What does the average person sitting in their car do to learn or get on the mailing list or figure it out? Just go to alec.org yeah. and sign up and you'll send them everything. Will you overwhelm them or will you send them only what they ask?
Well, I mean, if they want to be overwhelmed with all the Alec publications and my latest op-eds and blog posts, I'm happy to get those to them. But alec.org, you can sign up for our emails. If you want to become a member, we'd love to have you as well.
What is the podcast about? What do you normally podcast about?
Yeah, the Alec Across the States podcast. We like to have legislators on every week to talk about, you know, the latest reforms in their state, innovations, things that they're thinking about, they're worried about. But we also like to highlight our state legislators of the month on the podcast. And it's just, I think, a great tool.
Yeah, in the 90s, when I was your age, the welfare reform movement began in Wisconsin and it spread across the country, much like the education reform movement has done. Alec had a lot to do with that. I don't know what the next frontier is, but whatever it is, I know you'll be first there and you will explore it well. Lee Schalk, thank you very much. Go to alec.org, download Rich State, Poor States, get on their mailing list, become a member, support them. If you can, and come right back for more of today's December 1 edition of The Hugh Hewitt Show.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful.
Oh, it's Hugh Hewitt, and I have to talk to someone from Michigan. They're doing this to me in the week after the big upset in Columbus, but Ohio State's still going to get in the Final Four because USC is going to choke. Representative Phil Green from Michigan is here to talk about energy issues, but first we got to find out where he's from in Michigan and what he thought of the game this past weekend.
So currently I represent the thumb area of Michigan, District 84, which is the thumbnail Huron County and the western half of the thumb. But with incoming new lines January 1st, I will be flipped north to south off part of Genesee County and half of Lapeer County and then my one township in Tuscola.
Was Genesee named for the beer or was the beer named for Genesee?
You know, I'm going to guess that the beer was named for Genesee.
Okay, my favorite, back in the days when we thought that beer was food, Genesee was my beverage of choice.
And understand completely years. And life changes.
Yeah, life changes. Now, Phil Green, tell us a little bit about your state, because you're going to move the presidential primary up, according to what I read this morning, so that Gretchen Whitmer is positioned in the event that Joe Biden doesn't run for president to run for president. What's that all about?
Well, I find it interesting the different ways that we try to manipulate and act like nothing is happening. It's just, you know, nothing to see here, folks. But behind the scenes, there's a lot of different things. And as human beings, we consistently strive to make ourselves relevant. And we think that moving a presidential primary up to, what, February 24th in Michigan, what could go wrong? In February in Michigan, you know, to drive voter turnout,
nothing like the fact that they do not shovel the sidewalks in Ann Arbor to get to the voting booth in February in 2024.
Or they don't plow the snow in the thumb.
Yeah.
You know, so nothing could go wrong there, but it's a strive to be relevant.
So tell me a little bit about what happened in Michigan, because Democrats say that was their big win. They reelected the worst governor in America. They flipped both houses, right? And
yes.
So now it's a completely blue state. What happened?
Well, obviously you look postmortem and you see just a plethora. It's never one thing on a scale that large. It's never one thing. But we look back and we can see a very going back for even 8 years, the Independent Citizens Redistricting Commission voted in 2018, had a huge part in it. And then obviously we had a huge win last spring with the overturning of Roe v. Wade. And then that sort of pushed a voter turnout proposal 3. And then you get into the postmortem of what did I do wrong? What did we as a party do wrong? And I think there's enough things that just hit at just the wrong times.
When you get beat, it's important to go to policy, not politics. So what's the primary thinking for you? What do you want to get done as a member of the minority party now?
Well, I think obviously as a representative, and I shun the term legislator.
Okay.
I'm a representative. I have 90,000 people in my district that I represent. And so we begin looking at just kitchen table topics that maybe Republicans have. We'd been in power for quite a while. We made some major reforms and we started forgetting that there were literal people in our districts that we have to represent and make sure that government is working for them with their voice, and becoming more local instead of more statewide legislators. And so I think that's some of the things we're going to be looking at. Obviously, I was a sponsor of our education savings account bills.
Bravo.
I was for 6 years before I got in the legislature, I was a private Christian school administrator.
Oh.
And so seeing how that literally works. You know, we pay our taxes and then we support our schools and then we send our kids to a place that represents our values and then we pay extra for that. And so I think treating every resident, every student equally is very important.
Now, you know, that's going to happen in Ohio, the state down south.
Yes.
But that
yes.
state up north is not going to do that if it's all blue, are they? Or are you going to get it through? Are they going to work with you on it?
I highly doubt that those individuals that are looking at the cash cow of how to increase spending is going to stop and say, what's best for our students?
Yeah.
And I've said it this way. The superintendents of our schools have the Michigan Association of School Superintendents. The principals have the Michigan Association of School Principals, the Michigan Association of School Boards, the Michigan Educators Association. Who represents the students?
Yeah.
And the answer is their elected representative represents the students. And so we need to bring that focus back onto our students.
Well, good luck in doing that. You also need to bring focus back to what Michigan is not exploiting, which is its water and its energy resources.
Yes.
You got 1 minute. Does Michigan have a plan?
We're developing a plan, and it's a divergent plan. Obviously, the Democrats have a plan to make sure that the environment is basically make sure that humans are kicked out of the environment. And the conservative Republicans have a plan to make us energy independent, to make sure that we are affordable and can attract not only businesses, but people can afford to live in Michigan, as well as making sure that our energy is reliable.
You know, Phil, I just will never understand how Ohio can be so red and Michigan be so blue. They're the same state. I mean, it's really odd.
Yes. You have different games going on and different political machines happening.
Talk again in 2 years. And you just got elected again, right?
So yes. Elected for my term or 2 year term?
2 year term. Okay. When we talk again in 2 years, I hope you're in the majority.
We'll make sure we are. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Representative Phil Green. Coming back with Representative Danny Perez, the ALEC incoming national chair. Don't go anywhere, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, hour number two from the ALEC.org organization.
Hey, everyone. This is Dwayne Patterson, producer of The Hugh Hewitt Show. I've known for a while now that there's been far too much of me here in the studio, and I finally needed to do something about my weight. My excuse was always that I couldn't follow a plan with the crazy schedule that I keep. I heard about PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition and how they customize their program for each client, and I decided to call. This was no problem for Rachel and the PhD team. They had me map out what my day looks like and created a plan to follow. And so far, I've lost 16 pounds already, and I'm just 2 weeks in, on the way to my goal of losing 45. Call PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition at 864-644-1900 and make your appointment for your consultation. The plan is simple. It's based on science and nutrition. There's no pills or injections, and they even include 80% of your food if you want it. Call them right now at 864-644-1900 or find them online at myphdweightloss.com and tell them you heard about it from Dwayne, that producer Hugh actually has on The Hugh Hewitt Show.
In the heart of D.C., where the American Legislative Exchange Council is having its annual meeting, bringing in many of the 6,000 members of ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC.org, if you want to learn more about it. They are sponsors of my show. I love this program because we actually get geeked out and talk policy. Joining me is Representative Danny Perez, who you might remember from my Atlanta shows with ALEC. Earlier this year, Danny Perez is going to take over the gavel eventually. I can't figure out their system of the Florida State House. Representative Perez, welcome back. Good to have you. What is the system? You're in AAA, and then you go to – what's going on down there?
Well, first, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure. I do have a bone to pick with you. I have so much damn fun on your show. What is it going to take for me to get on here more than just when I see you at ALEC?
Who is this guy?
I mean, because here's the deal.
I have no producer, and it's up to him. He's the guy that's screwed
right,
that
I'm gonna, up, Danny. I'm going to start following you, man, because right. I got so excited. I woke up today at 6.
Almost canceled you because the Dolphins just crushed my brownies 2 weeks ago.
I'm sorry, but whoever's next is going to get crushed by the Dolphins, right, too. We're the real deal. Tua is the real deal.
You know what? It was a very bad day, but we'll see about that. And if your voters on the college football playoff put Ohio State ahead of USC after they get trounced, I'll forgive you. Danny Perez, I want to geek out here. I want to geek out on insurance. Because I got a brother with a house on Marco Island, and he retired there. And he tells me that this is their number one concern. I said, what? And it's sort of like the earthquake insurance crisis in California. Now, I cover all of Florida except Miami. I want to know what's going on, and what are you going to do about it?
So in comparison to the rest of the country, when we were doing our polling for this election, in conjunction with knocking on doors and meeting constituents, which is part of the election cycle, especially down in Miami, because if you don't knock doors in Miami as a candidate for elected office, you're toast. Because the Hispanic population likes to see you, feel you, touch you, smell you. We got to make sure you're real. We're going to ask you every question under the sun, how you met your wife, when you met your wife, how many kids you
where
have, their names,
church,
where you go to church. So here's the deal. When we were doing the election portion, the campaign portion of the election, the hottest topic was still inflation and the economy. Let's not run away from that. When we're talking about greatest concerns, it was always their pocketbook. That was over about 50% of the population in Florida. But right after that was something very unique to Florida. As you guys know, Florida's a peninsula, and we can never run away from that. And hurricanes are something that are a reality of our daily lives. They've been there forever, and they're not going anywhere. Property insurance in Florida is through the roof. No pun intended. It is completely astronomical. Personal example that I'm going to give you here. My property insurance rate went up 120% last year. 120%. That's not, you know, an extra $1,000. I mean, we're talking about more than double. I had to get rid of them, obviously. I had to go find another carrier, which, by the way, now just let me go. And so what we're...
They let the incoming speaker of the Florida House go?
Right, right. Yeah.
That's not very good government relations. I don't want you to name the carrier, but somebody made a mistake.
It's okay. But the problem we're having is everyone is then going to their option of last resort, which is Citizens Insurance. Citizens Insurance is a state-run insurance program, which is truly supposed to be for the last option on the totem pole, people that are desperate, that have nowhere else to go. Well, now the majority of our policies in Florida are getting written by Citizens. And so this program that is taxpayer-funded, by the way, is sinking more and more each day because carriers are leaving the state of Florida because of the increase in cost to the carrier. So the problem we have is how do we make sure that premiums can go down or at a minimum stabilize? Many experts say it has to do with the litigation. I'm going to give you some numbers, and I'm going to dumb this down for you. I know you're a smart guy, but I'm going to dumb this down for you. 80% of the litigation in this country when it comes to homeowners insurance claims comes from the state of Florida. Only 8% of the policies in the country are written in Florida, but 80% of the litigation comes from Florida. So now you're in this battle where you want to make sure that the policyholder still has their right to hold the insurance carrier accountable, because you have to do that. If not, the insurance company will roll you over. They will. Let's be very honest.
They're not the business of paying claims.
I don't want them at my family table at Thanksgiving. Right. I do not. But at the same time, they have a point. They do have a point. Why are they spending so much money on litigation? I'm not saying all of them are frivolous. Some of them have to be. There has to be some incentive going on that's making people feel comfortable enough to file so many damn lawsuits. And I'm an attorney myself. I worked on the insurance defense side. I didn't work in first party per se, but we're going to tackle that right now. So I'm going to give you guys, just to the listeners of our show here, some unofficial news, but a little bit of the rumor mill.
Okay.
So we start our first committee week in 10 days, 11 days. So we will be back in Tallahassee.
In December 12th,
I believe. 11th, 12th, around there.
There's no playoff football to concern you.
Whatever the Monday is. Yeah, well, it isn't if you're a Jaguars fan.
Okay.
Maybe not even if you're a Bucs fan. But it is if it's a Miami fan. But what we're going to do is there's a full expectation. The governor, who's done a phenomenal job in this issue, the current Speaker of the House, Paul Renner, and the Senate President, Kathleen Pasadomo, have made it a priority, a public priority known to the masses, that we're going to tackle property insurance. And so in our first committee week, instead of going through the regular run-of-the-mill presentations and updates from agencies and even a couple bills sometimes, we will most likely just focus on property insurance and actually pass some sort of reform that includes a lot of different angles, because there is no single solution, because I can't just blame attorneys for this, because that's not fair to them either. But I think there will be a multifaceted approach on many solutions to tackle the problems that we have in the insurance market. And hopefully Floridians are happy. The problem is that no solution that is passed in December is going to come to fruition in the next 6 months. It just doesn't work
Daddy
that way.
Yeah, Daddy Perez, when California went through this, when I lived in California, the insurers all pulled out because of earthquake insurance after Northridge. They just left. So the state insurance stood up, and it's wildly expensive, but you got to have it. You got to have it, or your house will fall down and you won't be able to replace it unless you've got, like, absolutely, you're not in an earthquake zone. That's not a, what ideas are on the table? I mean, it's really interesting. This is, if there were newspapers in the country, they would be following the problem, not the horse race of Democrats versus Republicans. This is a real problem. I assume Democrats want to solve this as well.
Well, look, I can just to go a little bit more in depth. And yes, to answer your question, Democrats are on board. This is a completely bipartisan issue. And Tallahassee, for those that don't know, Tallahassee is so different than D.C. There really is a camaraderie in Tallahassee that is not seen in most places in this country. Republicans and Democrats actually get along most of the time. We disagree from time to time. And there's been some instances where the crazies have kind of lost their mind, sat on the House floor and throwing a temper tantrum like my 4-year-old or my 2-year-old, actually more like my 2-year-old to you, yeah. Which that just happened last session, and that was pretty embarrassing. But putting that aside, I do got to defend some of my Democratic colleagues, because some of them are good people, you know.
And they have houses and they pay insurance.
And they pay insurance. And just like me, I'm sure that some of them had 120% increase on their premiums as well. No, it is insane. It is very real. Put it this way. When my wife called me, she checks the mail, right? When she called me, she says, hey, you got a letter from the insurance, right? That's usually how it goes. And then I come home and it's usually trash. And I said, no, you know, we don't need it. We can throw it away. She's like, hey, you got a letter from the insurance guys. I'm like, all right, you know, I'll see when I get home. I get home. I'm like, she said, what is that? I'm like, I'm a decently smart guy. She's a lot smarter than me. She's a pharmacist. I said, do you think this is like a joke?
Is this a phishing?
Yeah, someone
are they
messing
trying
with
to
me?
Get you to
right.
Yeah.
Is it, you know, hey, you're getting screwed. Let me help you out and save you $999.99 for the next, you know, 12 months.
Right.
No, it was real. It was real. Actually,
they were just driving you away. They wanted you to drop the policy. Well, they want out of Florida.
They want out. Well, they did leave.
Okay.
They wanted out. And so that's what they did. But look, I think we have, look, public adjusters in Florida right now are charging about 10% of whatever that consumer or that policyholder is receiving from the insurance company. So there's an incentive to that person to increase the cost of the replacement as much as possible because it's on a contingency of 10% as opposed to an hourly rate. So that is, and by the way, Hugh, that is one of many problems. And public adjusters do good work and they should get paid for their work. I'm not saying that they should go out of business. But when we're talking about, I'll give you an example. There's a member in the House that was at the center of Hurricane Ian that just happened, okay? House is salvageable, but it was hit hard. So he just received a check from the insurance company for $110,000. By the way, this house is 1,800 square feet, 3-2, normal house. So we're not talking about some million-dollar houses. I mean, his house is probably worth $350,000. So that's how bad the damage
is.
All right,
wow.
Okay, right. Okay. And that's why I say it, so that you guys understand the proportions of it. He gets a $110,000 check, and I said, well, you can fix your house. He's like, well, I got to pay this guy, the repair for this, the repair for that, the public adjuster. I'm like, how much do you pay the public adjuster? He's like, well, $11,000. I said, well, that's insane. That's insane.
You're going to have a machete to cut your way through the lobbyists to get into the state house.
That is true. On both sides, by the way.
I know. I'm just saying, I think it's a fascinating story. I don't know. Does Alec help you on this at all, by the way?
Alec has been helping me on this, but it is unique. You know, I mean, we're a peninsula. We can't run from that. That is Florida. We're not North Dakota. We're not. Well, I mean, it is what it is.
When's the special session start?
It'll probably be the week of December 12th.
If I had a producer, we would have you on that week to talk about what's going on, because I think that's a fascinating story.
I'm in.
Danny, thank you. Danny Perez from Florida. And if you live in Florida, they're going to fix the problem, he promises. He promises they're going to fix the problem. I'm amazed. 120%. Wow. Danny Perez, thank you. I'll be right back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt from Alec.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire. Jack Frost nipping.
Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. I'm such a geek. I love that conversation with Danny Perez. I could talk about insurance all day long. I'm not sure the rest of the country cares about Florida's insurance problems, but you should. Because the free state of Florida is where you're all moving to, and it's where the red wave is, and it's got one of the country's greatest talent pools. And I really do. You can't walk around Florida without bumping into a future national star, and they've become – they are the new Texas. So it's Texas and Florida go Republican in every election. New York and California go Democrat in every election, and then we play the rest of the game in 46 states. And so that's where it is. But thank God for Florida. But that's a big, big problem. Hey, I want to ask you all to remember AngelTree. When you're getting an insurance bill like Danny got, you might not have much left over. But $25 makes a difference to the children out there. And I don't know what Gallagher's doing. I think Gallagher's running a game. I think he's selling something out of the side. Whatever Mike is doing, I want to do it. So when you hear Mike ask for money today for AngelTree, go over to HughHewitt.com and give it to the Hugh Hewitt banner. Because if he's going to call me every day to taunt me, we can throw a flag on him for taunting. And, you know, he actually called me up yesterday. This was the worst excuse I've ever heard. You know what he did, Chandler Simo? He called me.
Was that Mike Bankman Gallagher?
Yeah, Mike Bankman Gallagher.
Yes.
Mike Bankman, free Gallagher, called me up. And he said, Hugh, I listened to Mike Gallagher on your show. And by the way, you know, I'm crushing you on AngelTree donations. Yeah, okay, I get that, Mike. He said, so I listened to Mike Gallagher on your show. Would you mind if I book him as a guest on my show? And I said, of course not, Mike. He said, you know, I'm beating you on the AngelTree contributions a lot. I said, of course not. You have Mike Gallagher on. Make sure you bring up the fact that the Packers are 4-8 and make sure you bring this up. And I gave him the number. I'm trying to help the guy. You know what he ended with? He said, by the way, I've lapped you already on AngelTree contributions. And the other hosts aren't even close to us, right? And he said, I know you'll try and come up with a big donor at the end with $100,000 or something. I said, no, don't do this to me, Gallagher. So I'm just appealing to the audience. Just apart from taking care of these kids, 1.5 million kids have mom or dad in jail. Prison fellowships take care of them. It matters a great deal. Tom Tratip sends me actuals every day. Do I've got an actual today, Adam, on it? Okay, let's listen to this.
It was such a blessing to assist these men and women sign up their children for Angel Tree. Many of the inmates thanked us for being there. One man handed me his Angel Tree form for review and said when he gets out of prison, he'd be supporting Angel Tree because it's been a blessing to his child for 3 years.
That is why you really ought to give. But if you need extra incentive, give to Embarrass Mike Gallagher, the radio talk show host. All right. So if you just need an additional incentive, do it for that. But do it for the kids. And they do so deeply appreciate every bit of generosity that you can give to them.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas.
Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt from the ALEC Conference in Washington, D.C. ALEC.org for everything we've been talking about. Joined by Representative Robert Smullins of New York. Well, I'm just going to call Colonel Smullins because I found out during the break he's a retired United States Marine Corps colonel. And having had a father-in-law who I never called anything but colonel, he wasn't dad, he wasn't Willie, he was just colonel. And he liked it that way. And he was a grand guy. So you just retired from the Marine Corps. What year?
In 2015, I retired.
So you got to do a lot of this war. You got to do what, 1991 as well?
I just missed that one. I did three tours in Afghanistan, including the invasion after 2001. We were the first Marines into Afghanistan after September 11th.
Oh, you went with General Mattis in that crazy airlift thing.
That's right. That's right. I was the leader of one of the assault waves there.
Oh, you know, he was a great guy. He's something of a radio friend, and I've interviewed him a few times. But his memoir is maybe the best memoir. It stops when he leaves the Marine Corps. It's the best memoir available on a military life. I don't know if you've read it yet, but it's terrific.
I have.
But that was a wild deal.
It was a wild time. You know, we were actually in Darwin, Australia on September 10th when the Twin Towers were attacked. So we immediately upped anchor and went offshore of Pakistan. We were in Pakistan shortly thereafter and then into Afghanistan.
Okay, so what's tougher, being a Marine landing in Afghanistan or being a Republican in the New York legislature?
Definitely being a Republican in the New York State Assembly.
Because you don't know who your friends are.
Well, and here's why. You can't shoot back.
Oh, okay. Well, give us the numbers. How many people in the House? How many people in the Senate, DNR?
Yeah, so there's 150 total. Right now, our conference has 43. We actually picked up a bunch of seats in this
42
last November.
Out of 150?
Out of 150. But we're pushing 50 right now. We're trying to get to that veto-proof, you know, minority status where we can block something if the governor
did they screw you on redistricting badly?
You know, we're actually still in the redistricting throes. Our case was deferred until after the election because it was filed too late. So we're actually going to do some redistricting coming up here by the beginning of April, we'll have to have the new maps done.
Okay, and where's your district, Representative?
So I'm actually upstate. I'm in the Mohawk Valley and the western half of the Adirondacks. If you know where Albany is, I'm about 40 miles to the northwest of Albany.
Oh, I stopped at a great diner in Albany. I'll think of it. It's right next to the state capitol. My fetching Mrs. Hewitt and I spoke at Chautauqua this summer at the Conservative Advocates for Balance at Chautauqua. You know, there are no conservatives invited to Chautauqua anymore. So we drove from Maine to Chautauqua, and we did the interstate across the state. Every other rest stop is closed. And then when you get there, the number one issue for all these people, five generations they've been in Chautauqua, is property taxes. You've got a crisis on your hand. Everyone's going to leave. They're going to get forced out of their houses.
Well, in New York, they continue to raise taxes. And what they do is they shift the burden to local governments. And they do that on the backs of property tax owners. It's why we need a property tax cap. It's why we need a definite hardline budget cap coming up. And that's going to be a big problem coming up in this next session. We had way too much federal money injected into New York. They got used to spending it. And boy, are they looking for more taxes to backfill it.
So you are the first blue state legislator I've talked to. What does ALEC do for blue state legislators?
ALEC is an idea factory. What it is it provides policy in states that work. We've got policies in, say, Indiana, the state that works. We've got policies in Arizona, a state that's been very successful in defending its citizens against the depredations of the federal government. It ends up being a firewall against them, and we're trying to inject that into New York.
So when you go back there, will any Democrats talk to you about obvious things like failed schools in Manhattan or Bronx or Brooklyn? Will they talk to you about property taxes? Or are they just indifferent because they won?
Well, mostly they're indifferent, but we hold them accountable. That's our job in Albany, is to hold the Democrats, one-party rule from the governor, the Senate, the Assembly, to hold them accountable on all the issues. And we do it all the time in committee. We do it on the floor. And we stand up. We speak out. We make our voices heard. We represent nearly 6 million New Yorkers in upstate New York and in areas of Long Island. So we have a sizable amount of equity at stake in New York. And we do our very best to make sure they're represented.
In California, I wonder, I left California after living there from 89 to 2015. I moved here in 2016 back to Virginia. And I always wondering, where did the money go? We have 70,000 people living on the streets in Los Angeles. 70,000. Now, Manhattan, they can't do that because it's cold. But where does all the money go? New York is taxed to the max. Where does it go?
We're number 49 in overall tax burden. The money goes everywhere except to a priorities-based budget needs list, which would indicate, you know, you want to get homeless people off the street. There's plenty of money in the New York state budget, but it needs to be allocated correctly. You pick any issue, and I can point out whether it's health care, whether it's infrastructure, you know, how that money gets gobbled up by the system is atrocious. It's, you know, it's completely inequitable to particularly the people that I represent in upstate New York.
Now, front page of the New York Times this morning, I didn't have a chance to read the whole thing, but I will later in the day. The new mayor wants to remove mentally ill people from the streets with or without their consent. Makes perfect sense to me. Will the Democrats buy any kind of enforcement on the unhoused, mentally unstable?
No, you know, actually the Civil Liberties Union and a couple other so-called good government groups are already saying that it violates their rights sort of thing. But I got to tell you, my daughter goes to school in Manhattan in college, and just in the 3 years that I've been watching the area around where she lives, it's gotten worse.
Is she in southern Manhattan or northern Manhattan?
In Midtown.
In Midtown, okay. So I would not get on a subway right now because I just don't know which ones are safe. I used to live in New York. I lived in New York 40 years ago, but I knew what to do. I just have no idea what to do. It sounds like it's a completely random set of assaults.
Yeah, insecurity is rising. It has to do with the bail reform laws that we passed, which were terrible. They took away judicial discretion. But when you pile onto it, the pandemic and now what you're saying about, you know, mentally unstable people that are chronically homeless, they're all over the place. And it really something needs to be done. Mayor Adams is on the right track. We need to back him in state government, but also, you know, his city council needs to back him.
Is there a caucus of the reasonable with whom you can work? I know there are left wing Democrats. There are going to be some progs who are out there who are just off the moon, Bernie Sanders. But you know, upstate New York is not an abnormal place. I used to go there a lot. It's a normal place. Are there some Democrats who will work with you?
There absolutely are. And I do work with them on a variety of issues. But the balance is such that, you know, it's 2-1. And the progressives in New York City are very loud. They're very forward about what they want their policies to be. And we're opposed to them. And we find a lot of middle ground to stop those policies.
Is it an initiative state? Can you put initiatives on the ballot?
You can, but it's a difficult lift to get a constitutional amendment on it or an initiative to approve something by the voters. It has to pass in two successive sessions and then go to the voters. So it's very difficult.
So you can't get a Prop 13 for New York?
No.
Okay. No. I just don't understand. How can a state survive when their property taxes go up that high? When I was at Chautauqua, people have owned and had their houses passed down through three generations. We're out of here. We've got to sell it to someone who can afford this stuff.
And that's what's happening. So upstate, about 1 million people have left in the last 10, 15 years. And primarily they're emptying out and they're going to low tax states like Florida, Tennessee, South Carolina, where their money goes a lot farther and where their liberties aren't curtailed every day. You know, New York has these gun control laws. We just had a Supreme Court decision that said people should be allowed to carry handguns outside their home for self-defense. What does the governor do? Call a special session, and then make the law even more onerous and more prescriptive than it was before.
And you'll lose again.
No, we're going to win that.
The gun owners will win.
The gun owners will win in federal court because the Supreme Court was clear. But what's happening is that, you know, with a one-party rule, with a veto-proof majority, without winning the governor's race, things become very difficult.
Big question. You come out of an organization for which there's almost universal admiration, the United States Marine Corps. I don't know if you know my buddy Mel Spies, two-star retired.
I do.
You know Mel. Mel's a good friend. We talk about why it works and government doesn't. In your opinion, why does the Marine Corps work? Why can they go from Darwin, Australia to the middle of Afghanistan in an unprecedented sea lift, something the Marines have never done before, no coastal access, and they can figure it out in 48 hours, and New York cannot figure out how to keep 1 million people from leaving?
Well, it has to do with the mindset, the ideology behind the Democrats' philosophies. And the Marine Corps is actually the opposite of that. The Marine Corps is a very innovative organization, but it's also the number one institution of national unity. And the reason I say that is that it takes Americans from all over the United States, brings them together for a common purpose, a common mission, then unites them with the enthusiasm that entails, and then they go and win. They do the job. They do the mission. That's fundamentally what I take to the state assembly, that attitude, that can-do behavior. And with that, you can do anything.
Now, there are a lot of veterans in the new Congress, up the street from us. There are a veteran caucus on both sides of the aisle that's great. It's the second greatest generation. Do you think that's going to change the way America works when these veterans come into public life?
It certainly will. And the reason is what I just said. The armed forces overall are the number one institution of national unity, whether it's West Point, the Air Force Academy, the Naval Academy, ROTC. Everyone goes, everyone serves. No one doubts that the war in Afghanistan was just. None of us like how it ended based on bad policy decisions. But we all work together to accomplish the mission. And that's what Americans are designed to do. That's what civic society is about. That's what we need to get back to in America.
Now, given that you're a colonel as well, you've gone to the war college, you'll know this sort of stuff. China's our number one geopolitical adversary, but in Manhattan, there are groups that are deeply invested in China. Does that ever come up in the New York legislature about the China compromise that has infected our financial institutions?
It does. I'm on the Banks Committee.
Oh.
It's something that's very serious. It needs to be looked at very closely because it's an overall wave of, 30 years of globalization, whether it's Confucius Institutes, whether it's, bias in financial institutions, whether it's buying up agricultural farmland in the United States. We need to watch these things very closely, not only from an economics perspective, but from a national security perspective. China is on the march around the world. I saw it in Afghanistan. I saw it in the Middle East. I see it in Africa. We need to beware.
On the Banks Committee, will you get SBF Sam Bankman-Fried? Will you get him to testify? Because his locus of money of his perfidies is New York.
Yeah, well, I think that he's going to end up before federal authorities before he comes before a state committee.
Okay, what do you think of crypto?
Crypto itself is a very neutral issue. What I like is the blockchain and the idea that you can provide financial security through an algorithm that's bulletproof. That's what I'm interested in. The cryptocurrency itself, whether it's representative money, whether or not the government should regulate it, that's an open question. The Chinese have specifically prohibited crypto. New York just passed a cryptocurrency mining ban for environmental reasons. The power,
the energy.
So I'm worried that New York is going to lose its footing as the financial services leader with bad policy.
So, New York is in a kind of, we got 2 minutes, Representative. We don't have a lot of time, but how long are you going to spend in this life? You've given 24 years of the country in uniform. Now you're putting time into New York. How long are you going to do? What's the objective for your life?
Well,
serve, obviously.
If you have a real passion for public service, if you care about what America is, what it should be, what it can become, I'm all in for the future of America.
And now, are you going to stay in the State House or are you going to look to D.C.?
I've spent a lot of time in Washington, D.C. I worked at the Pentagon. I understand. I was a White House fellow under George W.
Oh, you're a fellow?
And
which agency are you with?
I worked at the Department of Energy.
Oh, do you know Dan Poneman?
I do.
Dan's my college roommate, and he's a White House fellow like
he
you.
Is indeed.
And so you're not going to stay in New York?
Well, I'll do my very best. What the people need me to do, I'm up for the mission.
I called you congressman. I didn't mean to call you congressman there. I will call you state representative, soon to be something else. I'm not sure what. Smolens, thank you so much for joining us, and good luck, because, boy, that's a lot of Democrats to deal with.
Thank you, Hugh. It's wonderful to be on your show.
Thank you, Colonel.
Happy holidays.
Don't go anywhere. We got more Alec coming up. I'm going to get the Colonel's information because we're going to follow him, because now that he knows Mel, I got to figure that out.
Silver bells. Silver bells.
Oh, welcome back, America. We're going to get some Utah propaganda right here. I've got rich states, poor states, which is the one I leave in my bedroom in Maine. We've got unaccountable and unaffordable. That's unfunded public pensions. But here we've got the Economic Freedom Report. And I have the state Senate president from Utah with me, Stuart Adams. They always win these things, but he's bitter because for the first year ever, they're not number one in rich states, poor states.
No, we are. We are number one in rich states, poor states. But in the governor's rating, we're not number one. We're number two. And I can't imagine that.
Okay. Now, the only thing I really care about is that the Utes win this weekend. All right. They've got to beat USC for Ohio State to make it in the Final Four.
Well, we see that. We agree with that big time. I'm a graduate of the University of Utah. I predict they're going to win, and it'll be a close game. But
it can't be close. We have to crush them.
Well, we beat USC during the regular season, so we've got their number. We're going to beat them again.
We've got to scheme it up so that Caleb gets intercepted three or four times. You have to embarrass them.
Well, we'll work on that one. I'll tell you that.
All right. Would you go back and just say everybody in Ohio is a youth this weekend.
Well,
so, okay.
I'll convey that. I'll be talking to university president. I'll make sure he knows.
Now,
that'll push us over the line.
I don't know where to begin with Utah. My buddy O'Brien has got a second home there. Everybody tells me, I've been to Utah. I know your attorney general pretty well, and I know Utah pretty well. Why is it so well run?
Well, I believe it's the constituency. We reflect our constituency, and we have a great moral and a conservative constituency, and we reflect that. You mentioned that we're number one in rich states, poor states, and economists predict. They predict, a lot of economists predict different things. The key, and I think the key to any knowing whether their metrics and predictions are accurate is the outcomes. And Utah has not only been rated 15 years in a row by rich states, poor states, but we have the best economy. The census, people vote with their feet. During the last 10 years, numbers showed that Utah was the fastest growing state in the nation and per capita. And people are moving to Utah. Our biggest problem is housing. We've got another problem is finding people for jobs. I was talking to one company the other day. They have 4,000 unfulfilled jobs in Utah. Unemployment rate is the lowest in the history of the state, under 2%. So if rich states, poor states, give metrics out, and they say we're the best in rich states, poor states, we ought to have the best economy. And we do. It's a great publication. Steve Moore, Art Laffer, and Jonathan Williams do a great job.
I want to go back. Here's a real outlier. I worked for PBS for 10 years, and the very best state PBS is Utah's. They brought me back. My friend was the elder Neil Maxwell. Did you know Elder Maxwell? Elder Maxwell's a buddy of mine.
Phenomenal person.
He's just one of the best people I've ever met. And they were doing a PBS show, and Utah's PBS actually imported me from California so it wouldn't be an LDSer interviewing an LDSer. And I was just astonished by how well run the Utah public television station. Everything in Utah runs well.
Well, we think we do a good job, and I'd like to take credit for it all, but I can't. But
how long have you been in the state senate?
I've been since 2009.
Oh my goodness! So you are really committed.
Yeah, so I am, and been senate president for the last 4 years.
How do you like that job?
It's a tough job. A great job.
Did you have a supermajority of Republicans?
We have in the Senate. We have 29 total members. We have 23 Republicans.
I like those numbers.
So
how about in the House?
Numbers. In the House this year, we have, I think, 61 Republicans out of 75. So we have a supermajority. And again, I think that's why Utah is so well run. We believe in limited government, free markets. It's an amazing thing what competition does. And then we believe in states' rights. We've done some things. We believe we are the laboratory of innovation.
What are you going to do on school choice? Now, I know Arizona has set the mark now. They are they're the pace car. And everybody gets $6,000 to do with what you want. What's Utah going to do on education choice?
We're going to run a bill this year, Hope Scholarship. And we're going to try to do, I think, as good as Arizona and maybe better. We're seeing parents. I mean, we managed COVID fairly well. There was a study came out of University of Illinois, looked at three different metrics. One is fatalities, the other is economy, and the other is kids in school. We opened up our economy May 1, 2020 through a legislative action and never closed it. We put kids back in school, but parents are a little frustrated. They're frustrated with the fact that their students were actually forced to, for a period of time, to come home. And the kids were having pizza parties at home. It just didn't make sense. And I think they want choice.
Yeah.
And this is a time for choice in Utah.
Well, the Arizona model is right there. You can pick up on it. And you'll have teachers galore moving to Utah. But talk to me about housing, because the cost of housing in Utah is a real deal. It's like California and Maine and New York. It's going through the roof because people want to move to excellence. And so you've got the problem that Florida has. So what are you doing about it?
Well, we could give subsidies, and we've looked at that very closely. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that just creates more demand.
Yeah.
And so the solution is to create more product, and actually we have more throughput. In other words, you got to create more housing. If you have more housing, more product, the price is going to go down. The regulatory process, Utah not only has great tax policy, we have really good regulatory process, and that helps people. Time is money. And if we can get things approved faster and allow more density, allow more product, we'll tackle
that. Do you have a NIMBY problem in Utah?
Everyone has a NIMBY problem.
I know, but some places like California, it's completely out of control. Does Utah try and make sure that?
We're working on that. It is. And again, it's amazing. People move to Utah. They love it. And then they don't want anybody else there.
If I was 25 again, instead of going to California, I might have gone to Utah, because Utah is the new California.
Well, from my house to Salt Lake City is 23 minutes. From my house to Snow Basin, 23 minutes, skis off. It's a great spot. We don't have a beach, but we have great skiing, and I'll be skiing Saturday.
Oh, Senator, thank you so much. Senator Adams from Utah, always a pleasure to talk to you. And remember, by 50, we got to crush the Trojans.
So go Utes.
Go Utes. Go Utes. We'll be right back, America. Hour number 3 from Alec coming up here on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Look, you did the tough thing during COVID. You paid your people and pulled your business through the pandemic, or really the lockdown. And now, doing the tough thing could qualify you for up to $26,000 per employee at COVIDtaxrelief.org. Government funds are available to reward companies with 2 or more employees who stayed open during COVID. This is not a loan, and you don't have to pay it back. The program is complicated, but nobody knows more about it than the CPAs and tax experts at COVIDtaxrelief.org. You pay nothing up front. They do all the work and share a percentage of the cash they get you. Businesses of all types, including nonprofits and churches, can qualify, including those who took PPP loans, even if you had increases in sales. You did the tough thing for your employees during COVID. Let COVIDtaxrelief.org help you get up to $26,000 per employee. Visit COVIDtaxrelief.org. That's COVIDtaxrelief.org.
Figure out what the best agendas are. From Colorado, Representative Patrick Neville joins me. Representative, congratulations. You won in a bad year in Colorado because the Democrats got a good governor there in Jared Polis. So you stood up against the storm. What are the numbers in the Colorado State House this year?
In the Colorado State House, it's gotten pretty bad. It's 46-19.
So
I'm actually at the end of my term on it, but the person who replaced me at for my district did win.
Oh, so you're not going back in?
Nope.
You're free at last?
I am free at last.
What are you going to do?
So I'm here in Alec because this is the exchange of ideas, and I got one really monumental piece of legislation passed last year, and that's on healthcare price transparency, transforming 1/5 of the American economy and actually getting price competition and market forces into the healthcare system. And I got that passed 99-1 last year, so I'm here to share that information with other states and encourage them to pass the same legislation.
Is Alec going to do a model piece of legislation based on the Colorado bill?
They already have. They actually combined the Colorado bill, the best parts of the Colorado bill, and the best parts of the Texas bill, and that is their model legislation.
What did your bill do that the average consumer would love? Because I get medical bills. I don't look at them. You can't read them. You have no idea what they mean. Just send me a bill that says a number that I owe you, and I'll pay it. But they said this is not a bill. If we stopped sending out everything in the United States that said this is not a bill, we would save millions of dollars.
Right. So what I did is I leveraged the federal rules that Trump started and then Biden actually signed. And so those rules say that you have to post everything in machine-readable format, your cash negotiated prices, your insurance negotiated prices, everything in machine-readable format. The problem was the federal government's slow to enforce. And so rather than inviting more Biden bureaucrats or even creating a state agency, what I did at the state level is I took a look at it and said, what state services can we deny hospitals that aren't compliant? And the two biggest ones are the state sanction collection agencies and the court system. And so my bill says that if they were not compliant on the date of your service, then you as a patient can actually exercise that right. And if they try to send you to collections or send you in the court system, you get the full amount of your bill back plus your attorney fees. So give the patients the enforcement mechanism, the consumer, and empower the consumer. And then with that information, there's now people in Colorado developing applications that you can actually go online and shop prices. You can see that something like a colonoscopy can range in prices from $315 to $9,800 in a 20-square-mile radius. And so consumers
now... That's nuts.
It is nuts. And that's the problem with our healthcare system. We've never had any price competition that actually forces the providers to compete and provide better services, better quality services, and actually compete for price.
So you put the lawyer, the trial bar, on the side of the patient.
I did. It was the one time.
That's a powerful thing.
It is. And I think what we're going to see in Colorado, the bill went into effect August 10th. And I think we're going to probably see 4 or 5 lawsuits. And then all the hospitals are going to come into compliance. And now the market, new markets are coming in with these applications that you can sign up for that empowers those consumers to actually.
So what does machine readable mean?
Machine readable means that it's got to be something that can actually become in a certain format that can be read. So they can't hide it behind all these different back doors. It's got to be easily accessible.
That's transparency just means the average American can open up a bill and understand, or a price schedule and understand what it means.
That's correct. And then with these applications, they make it even easier because they can pull that information in. You can sign up for that. So again, the free market actually solving the issue, not the government.
So they call it the Neville Law?
They actually, so I'm more of like a Rand Paul type. And then I actually sponsored the bill with the majority leader, who's kind of a Bernie Sanders type. So she supported it for consumer protection reasons, things of that nature. But in 8 years, we had never agreed on a single policy. This was the one we actually agreed on. And so we actually, her name was Representative Esgar. And they, it was a slip for the chair in the committee, said Nesgar. So it became the Nesgar.
That's pretty cool. Now, I'm very curious. You're back at ALEC to push a policy. So you're really committed to the policy, and it's a big success. What has ALEC meant for your 8 years?
It's been great. So I've gotten involved later on in my 8 years, but just being here, it's been a wonderful idea. Now it's, this is the one thing that I really accomplished that was big. It was the bill that I worked the hardest on. In Colorado, it's tough. It's very blue, so there's not a lot of good that comes out. So the one little bit of good I did get out that's, I think, monumental. Again, this is one-fifth of our American economy during an inflationary time. We can actually bring prices down and bring market forces into healthcare. And so I wanted to share that with other states.
Price competition makes everything better.
Absolutely.
Then you can compete on quality. Obviously, Mayo competes on quality, and you've got some great hospital systems in Colorado. But price is what people care about the most. And when it's a assembly line, and I don't mean to disparage colonoscopy providers, it's an assembly line. You just, it's not complicated stuff, at least not the first run. So I'm glad you're doing that. Now, have any other states picked this up other than Texas and Colorado?
There's some states that are actually already in the drafting process, so we're pretty excited. There's other states that are picking it up. And then, like I said, Colorado's bill did certain things. The thing that Texas bill did is they really codified in their state statutes the federal rules, which I think is a good thing to do as well. So they codified the federal rules in their state statute, and then with combined with what I did in Colorado with the enforcement mechanism, it's a really powerful model legislation.
Well, I are you a lawyer?
I am not.
Okay, so you have no incentive to have assisted the lawyers in having a new cause of action.
I did not. In fact, it's kind of funny because the trial attorneys, they're lobbyists in Colorado. I worked against him on just about every bill, but we had a good relationship. He knew I was an honest broker, and he was pretty shocked when I handed him a bill draft and I said, hey, I think I have a bill that you might actually like. And the look on his face was in shock. Like, there is no way that I would like a Neville bill. And the next day he ran it by people. And of course, I'm sure they did extra looking at it because it was a Neville bill and looked at it very hard and close and looked at every different angle. And the next day they said, we ran it by everyone and we love your bill.
So one of the Centennial State's most accomplished trial lawyers, a guy named Greg Gold, who is the son of my dad's law partner. And Greg has been making, you're a very plaintiff's lawyer friendly state, and it's going to be that way for a long time. But getting them on the side of the consumer, a real consumer thing, is a big deal. What are you going to do after politics?
So I'm actually started my own consulting firm. I've got, I call it 1-9 Strategies, and I'm using this to push different policies like this.
What does 1-9 stand for?
Joshua 1-9. It's a verse that God kept putting in front of my life the whole time when I first started in politics. And
I'm Catholic. I don't know what it is. What is 1-9?
So be strong and courageous. Do not be dismayed. The Lord God is with you.
So what kind of business do you want to do?
I'm doing strategic consulting.
And so is it taken off already, or you have to wait until you're out of the legislature?
It's taken off already. I can't work in Colorado specifically, but this is what's great about because of our ethics rules. So I can work nationwide, and that's what I'm doing.
You can't? Colorado has actually bars the door to former legislators lobbying?
It does. It gets pretty tricky. So I'm just trying not to do anything, get myself hemmed up and get in trouble in Colorado.
Do you still have the political bug?
I do a little bit. I mean, yeah, for sure. And it's especially when you start working outside of Colorado nationwide, there's very, very fruitful ground out there. Colorado has been really tough for the last 8 years, but then you start seeing the ground outside of Colorado and there's lots of opportunity.
Now, one thing I do on my ALEC show is make sure that people understand the political force majeures that are moving across the United States. I think Jared Polis is one of them. What's your estimate of the Democratic governor of Colorado?
He is very smart and tactful. So I think as Republicans, we should watch out for him because he's probably the smartest politician I've ever met with.
And expand on that for people who don't know. Why do you say that?
I've sat down with several, I was minority leader for 4 years, and I've actually sat down in several different meetings with him. And just the way he calculates political decisions on the fly and knows all the different forces and all the different players and every single decision he makes, the way he plays the media, the way he does his messaging, he's an incredibly sharp guy.
I've never had him on the show. That's because I don't have a producer. But if I had a producer, I'd get him on the show. I'm told he does serious interviews with opposition people. Have you seen him sit down with conservatives and talk?
He has. He's actually even come to the Western Conservative Summit. So I could reach out to his office and see if I could get him on.
Jeff Hunt's had him at the Western Conservative
Summit?
He Huh? Are you connected up with my friends at CCU?
Absolutely.
Oh, very good. I taught there when Bill was alive, Bill Armstrong, and they're a great little institution. And you're in Castle Rock, right?
That's correct.
So, in terms of Colorado's future, is it just going to be blue?
I think it is for the foreseeable future. I like to say that if it wasn't for our taxpayer Bill of Rights, we probably would just be officially East California at this point.
Yeah. I call the University of Colorado. The University of California at Boulder. In terms of Lauren Boebert barely winning, what was that?
I think she had a really tough slog because there wasn't a lot of excitement at the top of the ticket. And everyone just assumed she was going to win. And so that kind of actually hurt her in a big way, that she didn't have that excitement. People weren't really turning out for her. There was a lot of focus on the state Senate, not her race.
You see, I've been on the air for 23 years in Colorado. Bill Owen is a friend. Wayne Allard was a friend. Bill Armstrong. What happened?
Well, it's a mixture of Republicans being complicit and then the Democrats, with Jared Polis leading the charge, really did the blueprint in Colorado.
And they learned how to work it from the bottom up.
Yep.
Well, good luck in the national consulting. What's the website for the new business?
19strategies.com.
19. Is it all spelled out or the numbers?
Either way, you can get there.
Okay, 19strategies.com. Thank you, and thanks for serving the state of Colorado, Patrick Neville. I'll be right back, America. Don't go anywhere. Hugh Hewitt from the ALEC.org organization. We'll be right back. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. They're with Sierra Pacific. They lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Believe it or not, America, yesterday Love Actually came under withering criticism for being too straight, too white, too English. I honestly, Love Actually is just like everybody's favorite movie, but that's what happened. Back to my ALEC agenda. I'm at the American Legislative Exchange Council gathering, ALEC.org, and they sent me a Buckeye. Finally, Melanie Miller is going into the State House from Ashland. She is Ohio Representative-elect. She has not yet been sworn in. Melanie Miller, welcome. When do you take the oath?
Well, thank you so much for having me, Hugh. And it would be January 3rd, we believe, will be the date. We have some transitions in Ohio. We just voted a new Speaker of the House, so we're waiting on some of those schedules to still be released.
Your new Speaker is a friend of our friends at the Center for Christian Virtue. Aaron Baer tells me your new Speaker is just all in for the backpack funding. We're going to talk about that, but first tell us about Ashland and your district. How you won, why you got into politics.
Absolutely. Well, first I want to say we have an incredible, Ohio is a great place to
live.
Yes,
it is.
We are the heart of it all. We're a little nutty being Buckeyes. Yeah. But I love our state motto, with God all things are possible.
Yes.
And I absolutely believe that in Ohio. And I think the best is yet to come. We're positioned in a great place now with a very conservative speaker that will be our leader for the next 2 years. But the reason I decided to get involved, just to kind of back up, I have been the executive director of our faith-based pregnancy center, serving Ashland County for almost 8 years now. And so the life issues regarding values for our
families.
How
many babies has your center helped bring into the world?
We have saved, what we know to this date, over 3,000 babies.
That's amazing. Congratulations.
And we've celebrated over 40 years of ministry since 1981 we began. And truly, that is one of my greatest life's mission.
You can't actually trump that.
Absolutely.
That's about as good as
absolutely.
You can do.
Babies restoring families, helping parents succeed in life and helping them put tools in their toolbox, establishing virtue back in their life with helping them earn items as they do education. Great passion. So pregnancy centers do great work, not just in Ohio, but across the country. So huge advocate. But for me, as I would be invited to the State House to testify, give proponent testimony on legislation, I would begin to see that there are not a lot of women in Ohio serving in the legislature, especially conservative women. And so that, I think there were seeds planted over the last 8 years. And then as a former Miss Ohio, I've been invited. And so I think just over the years, it's been planted in my heart. Ashland, Ohio is a great place. I'm married to the great mayor of the city of Ashland, my husband,
Carlos
Matt.
Campos, a friend
Carlos
of ours,
is a
running
great
president
man.
Of that. I've been the commencement speaker on commencement day. I was the substitute commencement speaker when they lost it. I got a call from Carlos. Are you free this weekend? So, okay, have a suitcase. We'll travel. But I love Ashland. Great university. In fact, that was 8 years ago or 6 years ago because Rob Portman was running for reelect when I sat down with him. And now you have a new senator in J.D. Vance. You got a great governor in Mike DeWine. Right. You can get a lot done. How are you getting ready to be a new legislator?
Well, the work began immediately after the election. We were invited, all the new class was invited to the State House to do a week-long new member orientation where we were onboarded by different groups. And so it was great. We have our ID badges now, which is very exciting, very surreal. Of course, we've been in the process of hiring each member of the House and the Senate.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. What are you doing about staffing?
Yes. Well, we have a wonderful legislative aid program with LSC in Ohio. And so there's a great pool of young individuals who are vetted already for us. So I'm very excited. A young lady that I offered a position to that's neighboring my district just accepted. So very excited to, I think we're going to make a great team. So there are definitely people that they can choose from. Or there's also, you can bring somebody from your district. So,
I got to warn you about Marie Bear. Aaron Bear is a friend of mine. He's from Warren, Ohio. Maria's a Steelers fan. And so we want to avoid her at all costs. She's a lovely person, and we love her. But you've just got to be very careful. She's a Steelers fan. And, of course, the Center for Christian Virtue across the street. Let's talk about the backpack funding. This is the most important thing. Coming from Warren,
absolutely.
Our schools have had troubles over the years, the public schools. I went to Catholic school. They need to get across, and in Cleveland especially, do you think it's going to pass? Do you think it's going to be on the agenda?
I do. I do believe that with our leadership and with the new incoming freshmen, I think we have a supermajority. We have a very conservative majority in the House. And I do believe this is a priority. In fact, I've really enjoyed with some of my other fellow colleagues that are here with me at the ALEC summit this week. We've been diving in more to other states that have already passed the legislation, like Arizona.
Yeah, Doug Ducey here, I think, yesterday.
Yes, he was incredible. So it's very exciting to see the success already in states that have passed this and how we're saving money, how students are excelling. And really, it comes down to parents know what's best for their children. That's what it comes down to. So I'm really excited. I think overall, too, what you're seeing across the country and in Ohio, too, parents want this. Parents want this. The biggest pushback truly has been the unions, the teachers unions.
Governor DeWine has articulated a concern for rural high schools because they're often unified school district. There's only one school. It brings the whole county together. It seems to me there's a way to protect them and at the same time take care of the kids in Cleveland who have been failed for a generation.
That's right. I think so. In fact, yesterday I was just in a session that talked about this issue, about the rural schools, that is a concern. But the different statistics are showing that's not the case.
Oh.
They are, yes. Yeah. So I do think there are, and the other nice thing too about the backpack bill or school choice is that you can opt into that. Even too, there's been questions about homeschoolers. There's been a lot of questions. Homeschoolers, a lot of them choose to homeschool because they don't want the government involved. They don't want to do that. So you can opt in. And there's so many different levels of, you know, the backpack bill or school choice as we're talking about.
Just go far and go fast.
That's
now,
right.
When they give out committee assignments, I want to get into a little bit of the sausage making. You're a freshman. You're likely to be there. Do we have term limits in Ohio?
We do.
Is it 8 years?
8 years.
So you've got 8 years ahead of you in a good Republican district. The committees that you choose will matter a lot. Which ones do you want and which ones are you going to get?
That's
you have
right.
to usually take one you get you want and one you don't want.
Absolutely. Well, I'm really hoping to be on the finance committee. We've been training a lot this week on how to be fiscally responsible and conservative in our states and learning about what to look for in the state budget. How do we cut government spending? That's so important as we move into the future. So I certainly hope that I would be appointed to that committee. Obviously, my work with the Pregnancy Resource Center,
health would be one of interest.
And definitely the local government one I'm very interested in, and perhaps even agriculture, since our district is a very strong agriculture
people
community.
Don't know that Ohio has a huge agricultural sector. They just think of it as being covered with the snow effect. But in fact, they grow a lot of things up in northwestern Ohio. They get a lot of stuff done there. So in terms of getting those committee assignments, who makes them?
the speaker, our new speaker.
Mr. Speaker, put Melanie Miller on finance. We're talking to you. What's the new speaker's name?
Mr. Derek Marin.
Okay, Derek, let's get this done and take care of whoever's from Warren. Who's from Warren? It's a Democrat, probably.
We have from the Warren area. No, actually, we have a conservative in that area. I'm trying to remember who is actually representing Warren. I believe it may be Nick Santucci.
Santucci's are all over the place. But yes. We had Naders forever, and Bob Nader was a good Democrat. I mean, old school Democrats. The Ohio Democrats have been not crazy like National Democrats for a long time.
Right.
So you ought to be able to work with
them.
That's
right.
In terms of the initial workload, do they try and get stuff done faster? Are they going to go far and fast in Ohio?
That's a great question. I think that we know that with a conservative speaker that's only going to be in office for 2 more years, we have a lot we want to get through in these next 2 years. And so Ohio, when we're in session, we start in January and then we go through June, and then we take a break. And then, of course, the fall, which right now a lot of Ohio legislators are not able to be here because they're in lame duck.
They're in session
back to back to push over 70 pieces of legislation through. Now, so I do think that will be a priority to get
it
all those
may
done.
Be the reddest. You got Mike DeWine, you got Dave Yost, great attorney general,
yes.
You got a great lieutenant governor. I mean, everything is red. Right.
Yes.
So you have to deliver.
Yes.
Do you feel the pressure from your colleagues at ALEC that you can actually be a beacon of how freedom works
Absolutely.
In the middle of the country?
Absolutely. Well, I think Ohio, going back to it, we're shaped like a heart. We're the heart of it all.
Yeah. Well, first
so
state.
Ohio goes
state
so
of the Western
country.
Reserve.
That's right.
Free soil forever.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I like to tell you. First in the flight. First in the space with John Glenn.
That's
first
right.
on the moon with Neil Armstrong. No, Ohio, no nothing.
That's right. Ohio is a great place.
Leah Beebe is from New Jersey. He's laughing, but in fact, it would not be Leah Beebe if it wasn't for Ohio.
That's right.
In terms of Ohio, that was a bad weekend.
It was a bad weekend. We're
all Utes right now. We are all Utes. We are rooting for Utah against that terrible USC Trojan team. Go Utes. Get Ohio State into the Final Four. In terms of public education, you're not an enemy of public education.
Correct.
And so, would you explain
That's
that
right.
to people? Yeah, it's not against public
absolutely.
Education.
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm a product of public education and it worked well for me. I loved it. I had great teachers. I had a great district. I had a lot of great opportunities. I also went to the career and technical school and enjoyed that. So I think the reality is public education may not be the best fit for every unique individual student because everyone has different talents, different giftings, different learning styles, and parents should be able to have that choice to determine this is the best education or school option for my child. So we're just giving people, families, more choices, and competition is good.
Now, let me raise the third rail, tenure. Now, I'm a tenured member of a law school faculty, and so I like tenure. Tenure means I can say what I want to say. I don't have to worry about faculty voting me off the island. But tenure in the K-12 system doesn't make any sense to me at all, but it's everywhere. Do you think that the Ohio legislature might touch tenure?
Possibly. I think anything's possible. We have a lot of... we have a really unique class coming in and current people who are in the legislature with different backgrounds. We have a lot of experts in education. We have former teachers and current teachers. So I think those are all going to be on the table for discussion.
How big is the freshman class of the?
We have 15 or 16 of us coming in. So
do you elect a freshman class president like they do in the Congress?
I'm not sure. I am not sure if we'll do that yet or not.
And so when you all come back and you get together and you go to your separate corners, do you have any Democratic friends?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think what was really nice about Ohio having an orientation, and unfortunately the class before us didn't have that opportunity because of COVID. Everything was virtual. But we did everything together. So, I think the most important thing when it comes to people who may not see things the way maybe you do is to find something you do have in common and to get to know those individuals. What are they passionate about their life experience? Because you do have to work together. You absolutely do. And when you talk to someone who may not agree with you on maybe different moral issues, there's always something you can find in common or something that, you can find compassion towards.
In Ohio, it'll be the Browns, the Cavaliers, and the Guardians.
That's right.
Melanie, thank you so much. Congratulations on your election. Good
thank
luck
you.
In the Ohio State House. Lean on Aaron. Be careful of Marie. And generally, go Bucks. All right?
Well, thank you
and
so much.
And go Utes.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Welcome back, America. It is the most wonderful time.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Of the year, I'm in Washington, D.C. with the ALEC gathering, the American Legislative Exchange Council's annual meeting. They sponsor our show, but this isn't working. I love talking to these idea people, these state legislators, and the big boss is Lisa Nelson. She joins us now. She is the CEO of ALEC. How long have you been the CEO of ALEC, Lisa?
Going on 9 years.
Well, you have done an amazing job, and whoever put together the lineup of our guests was really on top of this year. Now, I'm holding in my hand Rich States, Poor States. Now, I got this at the last time I did it, Alec, and I took it with us to our vacation place in Maine, and I leave it in the guest bedroom because people look at it, what is that? And the first, they come from all over, right, when they visit you in the summer. And the first thing they do is they go and they look up, where are we? And then they start reading and they compare, and they might even move. This is probably the most impactful publication any government organization has put out because it's easy to read and it compares.
Well, and it's funny, anytime you read a book or buy a book, and if you think you might be mentioned in it, that's the first place you look. I always try to tell our staffers, you know, make sure you spell people's names properly and do those things, because the minute they go to a publication, that's what they're going to look at. And you're right. And that's why we put the states in order and we say, you know, look at what your state is. Jonathan Williams has a saying that is, you know, people are voting with their feet. We always talk about the fact that you saw it in the redistricting, that we lost seats in California and New York, and we gained seats all over the rest of the country. So absolutely, the Rich States, Poor States publication has been a guiding force for many people for years.
Now, I also am an apostle of people joining ALEC, like Melanie Miller was just here. She's beginning an 8-year career. This is the best way to begin an 8-year run. Assuming she gets reelection, she's very, 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 very good elected official. So I'm assuming she'll be there for 8 years in the House and 8 years in the Senate. If they start at ALEC at the beginning, they'll develop these networks across the country. Have you seen that over your tenure?
Absolutely. And that's why we've started something called our New Legislator Academy. For every cycle, when we have an election, we have a New Legislator Academy. And typically we'll bring in 25 newly elected legislators, even before they're sworn in, like Melanie. She hasn't been sworn in yet.
Right. Not until January.
This year at this meeting, we had 53 newly elected legislators because there was a huge, you know, they call it the great resignation, the great kind of realignment, a huge changeover in those 7,342 legislative seats all over the country. I think over 1,600 flipped.
7,342 legislators in the United States. Mm-hmm. And ALEC will reach out to all of them, Democrat, Republican, Independent, Green, no matter what they are. You will help them.
Yeah.
Now, last night I was at the Hillsdale Teletown Hall on school charter schools.
Yes.
And we talked to 20,000 people on the line listening. This is the moment. This is the renaissance for school reform. Do you see that among all of your members?
We are so excited. And actually, I just left a session on school choice to come and talk to you, where we've got an organization called Lifelong Learning that's talking about capturing that nexus of kids that might not graduate from high school, and capturing them and trying to get them into schools. That ESA, the education savings account, the lifelong learning, the school choice movement, whatever you want to call it, the Hope Scholarship, it is absolutely on fire. And I think it's mostly on fire because people have woken up to this parental rights movement. We've got Moms for Liberty here. We've got all kinds of organizations.
Oh, Moms for Liberty is here?
Yep,
They've done a great job.
I'm meeting with Tiffany Justice later this afternoon, and we're super excited about partnering on a few things. But we've got a list of 8 or 9 states, and I can tell you even just this week I've added 2 more states to the list that want to pass the Arizona or the West Virginia model.
It's going to be the golden era of school reform. It's, and I think you guys totally are at the point agree. Of the spear. This past weekend, we baptized my new granddaughter. And so my son's father-in-law, Russ, who works at a community college in North Carolina, was here. Community colleges are also entering into this game. They're figuring out they got to train people mm-hmm. for trades. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about they teach linemen. And so if you get the community college reform going on top of the high school and K through 12 reform, we can actually revamp American education. Are the community colleges on your agenda as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first of all, the school choice that we're looking at for those 8 or 9 states is the K through 12.
Okay.
But the higher ed is absolutely on the list. And in fact, we've got a Center to Protect Free Speech that actually works on that higher ed side of things. And, you know, we're really looking forward to pushing that through this year.
So, Lisa, stepping back, you follow politics very closely from D.C. We didn't have a red wave. We had red thunderstorms mm-hmm. in places like Iowa and
like
Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And those thunderstorms were deluges. And then we had some little change in New York. And then we didn't make any progress in California. It's a failed state. What are we going to do about these failed states? What do you do?
I'm not going to write them off. And as you said, we reach out to every single legislator. We are a nonpartisan organization that wants to talk to all legislators. We can't give up on some of those northeastern states or California just yet. And I hope that we'll be able to kind of break through. There were a few legislators in California that were elected that we think we can talk to.
Oh, so, God bless you. I mean, yeah. That's missionary work. That's not easy. That's missionary work. But don't give up on California. I love the state so much, but I ain't going back there.
Well,
Lisa Nelson, congratulations. I think Alec is just the greatest thing in the world. If you're a state legislator or married to one or you know one, it's not that expensive. Join Alec.
It is $100.
I know, it's
legislator.
$100, and then you come to D.C.
And we'll help you.
And then they will teach you, and they'll give you rich states, poor states, and get the book, not the PDF, even though it's available. Leave it in your guest room, because honestly, I've had more conversations about politics after people pick up rich state, poor state. They come down and say, how come Iowa's better than California? I said, read the book.
I love
Lisa
it.
Lisa Nelson, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Leah Beebe, thank you. Generalissimo for being here. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I'll be back in my studio tomorrow from inside the Beltway, but not in the heart of the Beltway. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thanks for listening.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.